What is up, freaks? It's your boy Marty Bent here on a Thursday afternoon for another edition of Rabbit Hole Recap. We have a guest in the studio for this week, but before we introduce our guests, let's introduce our sponsors. This week's edition of Rabbit Hole Recap is brought to you by Unchained Capital. You freaks know all about them. Their vault solution that they just released, the 203 multi-sig vault. You guys can use Treasure or Ledger with that. You control 203 keys at all time if you ever need Unchained to come in and sign that third key or that second key for you. They can come in. They also have their loan platform as well. So if you're established on the vaults, you'll easily be able to get liquidity in the future via loan. Right now, if you sign up by going to www.unchained-capital.com/vaults, you're going to get 3 free months of Safe Adena Mooses, the Bitcoin standard research bulletin. That's 3 free months of a very qual research bulletin. This episode is also brought to you by the Cash App. You freaks know all about it. They're helping us stack sats every Saturday. They're the first P2P payments app to institute Bitcoin buying on the app. It's a very seamless process. You can buy and send to your personal wallet pretty quickly after buying. They also have the Boost program and their Cash Card. My favorite Boost is the coffee shop. I actually used it this morning, saved $1 on this expensive ass Brooklyn coffee. I ran out of the concentrate that I've been using and had to go buy some, and luckily Boost was there to help me save $1. So go download the Cash App and start stacking sats today at the Apple App Store or Google Play Store. Gentlemen, the price of Bitcoin is $6,044.72. We're currently at block, waiting, 575,293. Binance got hacked at block 575,013. Before we get to that, we got to introduce Murad Mamadov, founder of Adaptive Capital, is back in the studio with us. Murad, welcome back.
Thank you so much for having me, guys, once again. My favorite show. Happy to be here again and talk to the boys.
Yeah, so we are officially 270 blocks away from the Binance hack. I think that was the best fast math I've done on this podcast in a while. So let's talk about it. Binance was hacked of 7,049 Bitcoin, I believe. 7,000 and change Bitcoin a couple of afternoons ago. There's been a lot of hoopla on the internet and on Twitter in particular, because CZ, the CEO of Binance, came out and basically nonchalantly said that they thought about rolling back the chain, the Bitcoin blockchain, coordinating with miners to roll back the chain to solve this issue. Obviously, they did not go forward with that, but it caused quite a stir. Other things to think about with this incident in particular, they had the SAFU fund, which is covering the losses. So there's a lot to talk about.
Which
in this
is denominated in BNB, I'm pretty sure.
Is it? Well, there's a lot to talk about this subject. Let's just start. Initial reactions, gentlemen. I'll let you take the floor.
First of all, the price is over $6,000 right now, right?
Yes.
That's awesome. Okay. The hack was of their hot wallet. They intentionally, you know, segregated their wallets, as is like common practice now after so many previous exchange hacks we've had. So I think it was 7,047 Bitcoin were taken.
Yes.
And that was basically their entire hot wallet got drained. But that was only 2% of their holdings. So intentionally, the way everything was designed, it worked as designed. So even though all their safeguards, all their measures got compromised, the ultimate safeguard, which was segregating the wallets into hot and cold, protected them in that regard. The second thing is that the real most ridiculous part of this whole thing is at the point when CZ was discussing it, it was already
too late.
No way he was going to be able to pull it off. Like, he was discussing it 3 hours later, 5 hours later. Like, it was way, way too late. Like, if you wanted to do something like this and like actually be successful at doing it, you would need to do it pretty much right away. The longer you wait, the less likely it becomes.
So before we get into like the whole rollback/double spend solution, let's talk about the hack in particular. A lot of people not hinting, but speculating that it might be an inside job, because the way that these Bitcoins were moved out of the wallet, they were moved to BEC32 addresses when Binance's API isn't supporting that yet. So the speculation is it may be somebody in-house that was able to route around that particular sort of hurdle.
I don't know if that necessarily points to it being an inside job, but with these hacks, a lot of times they are inside jobs. It's always the most likely thing to be. What was interesting was that most of so the funds went to like four non-SegWit addresses, and then the rest were SegWit addresses. So some people are speculating that maybe the way that Binance's safeguards were set up to verify their withdrawals, they weren't actually even looking at SegWit addresses, which could be a thing. But I don't know if that necessarily points to inside job or not inside job. And then the other thing is a lot of people think it was basically through a compromise of their API key. So a bunch of users who they're able to automate the connection to the exchange through that API. If all those keys are compromised, you can do like a mass withdrawal at once.
Yes, so that's the speculation around it. And all right, so let's jump into the reorg and slash double spend that people have been talking about for the last 24 hours.
I think in general, this is a permissionless system, of course, but in general, CZ suggesting something like that is a little bit untoward, in my view, not in the best taste. But in general, I think it's definitely a conversation to be had. I think it's good that a lot of people had sort of a brief lesson in game theory yesterday. Financially speaking, every 10 minutes, something like is getting more and more expensive for them to do something like that. Frankly, I think it's not something that can be done at this point. But I think in the future, with the declining block rewards, this is definitely going to be a topic that will probably be revisited a couple more times going forward. And I think, like, proportionally speaking, with the block rewards declining as the percentage of revenue of miners' revenue, it's likely that something like this sort of is going to return to the table of discussion. But if, like, I kind of share Matt's opinion here, if like a reorg of this sort or the quote-unquote bribing miners happens like in the first two or three blocks or like right after something like that happened, then it's like a manageable situation and probably something to be expected like a decade from now. But at the moment, I think this is a little other than concern trolling.
Yeah, you know, it all started, I think, through concern trolling that caught the eye of CZ. So we put this idea in CZ's head, and he hadn't really fleshed it out yet. But if he was actually a properly informed actor, I would say that he would have realized ahead of time, and now he definitely realizes, and now all the other exchange operators realize, that just mentioning it is a risky move as someone who has a major stake in Bitcoin success. Like CZ doesn't want the Bitcoin price to go down. Binance would be fucked if Bitcoin got fucked. Like they would just their whole business would go down the shitter. So he even suggesting that can hurt that value that he has, and actually trying to go through with it would hurt it even more. And that's why most actors never would. And even if he did at that point, he would need an overwhelming majority of miners to do anything about it. And the miners are operating under that same game theory where they don't want to hurt their investment and jeopardize the whole system.
Yeah, you're alluding to the loose game theory that exists and has been talked about over the course of the last 24 hours. And yeah, the coordination effort that it would take just to get the miners on board alone is something that seems massive to reorg it. So let's jump into like the reorg versus double spend. Was there two different types of...
No. So it was going to be basically what you do is...
You send out...
Yeah, since Binance has the keys already, obviously, because it was their withdrawal transaction, they can construct a new transaction that instead of paying the hacker, pays the miners all the money. There's no situation here where Binance can get their money back, but what they can do is... theoretically, they could have burned the hacker's money.
Yeah,
so the hacker wouldn't get it. The miners would get it instead.
Yeah, so the hypothetical was like send out a transaction for that 7,000 Bitcoin with like a 1,000 Bitcoin fee that would be divvied up between the mining.
But the thing is, if the thief realized at the same time, the thief could then reciprocate, and the thief doesn't have to pay block rewards while Binance does. So the thief, so presumably it would turn into like a bidding thing back and forth where ultimately
it just gets
only the miners would get the money.
Yes.
And you would potentially do like a lot of damage to Bitcoin's credibility at the same time. So it's no matter how you cut it, it doesn't really ever make any kind of logical sense. I don't think so.
No, neither do I. And again, the loose game theory that exists, a lot of people, yes, while this is technically possible, it's sort of the first layer through which you look at this. If you dive deeper and think about the coordination effort, the incentives involved, the sunk capital and the hardware and energy contracts, it becomes less and less likely that miners would capitulate on this, in my opinion.
I agree. I would add, though, if something like this becomes a common occurrence, probably lower the Bitcoin UX quality a little bit, because the transactors would essentially need to wait for more time before they're confident that their transaction actually went through. And I think Marty might crucify me for saying this on his podcast, but I think if something like this like actually becomes a frequent part of reality, without naming any specific names, but I will say that this might increase interest in assets where such reorgs are impossible.
This is when you need like the bleep button.
You could say whatever you want on this podcast.
I think like all of this is all this discussion is really good that we've had this discussion on Twitter over the last 24 hours or whatnot. I mean, it was really frustrating about to go to sleep and everyone freaking the fuck out.
I was so happy I fell asleep early.
Yeah, I just sent out like a quick tweet. I was just like, miners aren't idiots, and then I went to bed. But anyway, but I think it's important to realize that most of this discussion is really like it's a mental circle jerk. Like we're theoretically thinking of these more far off issues, because If you look at the number of orphan blocks that Bitcoin has had over the last year and a half, like it's not that many. It's like I think it's like 10 or 15 or something like that, and they're all one-offs. You know, there's never. I mean, I don't know when the last time there was like a two-block reorg, but it's been a long fucking time. So, you know, if there is some type of issue there in the future where we see like fee sniping and stuff like that because there's not enough, you know, big enough transaction backlog, then it can be addressed at that point as well.
Yes. So overall, I thought this was a great learning experience for any of you, the concept of Coinbase transactions and the releasing of the block reward sort of came up. So you freaks out there that don't know how like the release of Bitcoins works. The miner that mines a block, the first transaction in that block is the Coinbase transaction, which releases right now the 12.5 Bitcoin that miners get for mining a block 100 blocks after that block is mined. So that comes into the game theory as well, the opportunity cost of receiving that block reward or potentially like in a reorg not getting that when it's reorganized.
I would really recommend my friend's upcoming piece, Bitcoin, the Revolution in Accounting, and also his piece, The Ledger Assurances in Cryptocurrencies, by this guy on Medium and Twitter known as Permeable Nino. He's worked in accounting, like in actual like assurance companies for a couple of years. So he brings a very unique perspective to the table, and he actually shine light on a very interesting sort of mental model where he says that technically fiat currencies, gold, and cryptocurrencies, they're all similar in the sense that their moneyness comes from them being accounting tools, and the way they are valued over the long term is the trust in these accounting like institutions, right? And essentially he says that Bitcoin is much, much more trustworthy than anything we've had in the past, without needing all these layers and layers of laws and people. etc. And he like talks about some of like both like external but also like intra blog dynamics as well and things like that. And it's just very interesting. So essentially, the all of these forms of money are essentially Excel spreadsheets, metaphorically speaking. And essentially, these different forms of spreadsheets are competing how much people believe in them and like them and have faith in like have faith in their strength.
Yes, it's. I saw an interesting tweet too. It's like Bitcoin's not perfect, but it's the best thing we have in these accounting systems. I forget who said it yesterday. Out of all these accounting systems, it's the best we have right now. Yeah, but this Binance thing. Let's go back to like the Safu fund. Like, is that legitimate? Like, what is it? What is going on there?
It's. I think he takes a portion of fees, which are calculated in BNB, and then holds the BNB in like an insurance fund. Are you aware of this at all, Murad?
Yeah, it's I believe is it 10% of the fees?
But it's all BNB, right?
Yeah, it's I believe it's denominated in BNB. If that's the case, then that fund has been growing very substantially.
But that's like a little bit ridiculous when like your insurance fund is held in your centralized exchange token. Like that's like if, in any kind of real situation where you need an insurance fund, like BNB should be like in the shitter. In terms of value.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it would be more prudent to diversify it into a couple of other assets as well. But at the same time, BNB has been doing so well in the last 4 months that really, it's like, it's the least, it's the only crypto asset that's above its all-time high among like the long existing ones, right? And so it might not have been prudent, but thus far it has been a very wise decision on their part. Because it's as big as it could have been.
Yeah, I question the use of the term insurance fund, when it's you know that's like saying you know like Coinbase has insurance because they like have a bunch of equity in their own company or something. I mean, and BNB is even worse because it's not even equity.
Right.
And past performance isn't indicative of future results.
No. One day BNB is just going to go to zero. It's just.
You heard
not
it here.
Gonna exist anymore.
You heard it here first,
totally. And you just never know when it's going to happen. It's well, going to be like
yeah. Well, this instance in particular highlighted. Like Murad and I were shooting the shit about it before we started recording. Like some of the incompetence that exists at the head of some of these crypto companies. Like a lot of these people are held on pedestals, but they're okay to go on Twitter and release a video saying that they're okay with rollbacks. Pretty obviously not understanding the whole gravity of the situation.
Just like nonchalantly, you know? and he, like, so does he not, that's the craziest thing to me. Like, does CZ not have, like, a couple Bitcoin wizards, like, working at his company that he could talk to instead of, you know, doing, like, a powwow with Twitter people?
Well, apparently he's hooking up with John McAfee now. McAfee's going to push him in the right direction.
That's good. He's a very experienced cybersecurity expert.
Yeah, he's one of the best.
I'm not a distributed systems engineer myself, but it's quite ironic how a lot of these types of events, they often reveal that a lot of the times, like even some of the biggest miners or some of the biggest exchange operators, they're not necessarily like Bitcoin experts. They're just like doing their thing, you know?
Yeah, and that sort of highlights the fact of how hard it would have been to coordinate, too.
Like, but you don't have to be a Bitcoin expert to realize that like 6 hours after your hack of only 7,000 Bitcoin, like you're not getting it back. It's nothing, you can do nothing with it.
Yes. Another thing that's highlighted, too, which I want to touch on before we move on to the next topic, is this highlights maybe a benefit that BetterHash could provide if that mining pool software was adopted. In which individual miners are able to construct their own block templates, and you would have to coordinate with a lot more miners to make this happen. Though there are some trade-offs with BetterHash. The individual miners have to run their own full node, and like we just mentioned, not all these people running these businesses, mining companies included, are as technically competent as is assumed sometimes.
But it's definitely a net positive because we'll get more full nodes, more miners running full nodes. I mean, BetterHash would absolutely enhance the game theory in this type of situations. Otherwise, like, you're really relying on, you know, like 10 to 20 people who run these pools to not act honestly, but just to act rationally, just to act in their own best interests and not act like complete fucking dumbasses. Like, you need the majority of them to not be dumbasses. So if we have like a larger pool of people that are, you know, are with a, then enough will always not be a dumbass.
Yes. So let's try to better hash for a better future.
Better hash for a better future. I love that. I love that. We should put that on a hat.
We might. We may. Just one day. Speaking of hats, TFTC.io launched this week. Go check it out. There's hats for sale. I'm wearing one right now.
There you go. Limited edition.
Limited edition. Let's talk about our not on node, which got stolen overnight.
Yeah, someone stole it yesterday.
What happened there, dude?
I don't. Someone broke into our office and they took our node. So now it's running on Tor only, and we can't track them down. Mm-hmm. But it looks like the person is keeping it up and running. They have, you know, all the channels are still up and running. Looks like they're still targeting high uptime and that they'll reciprocate channels that are over 2 million sats.
Well, good for whoever's running our node now.
Yeah. I'm just glad. It seems like it's like a knowledgeable Bitcoiner is running it, so it's good to see.
Good for him. Well, let's actually keep it. Since he's running it on Tor, last week we touched on this. We weren't certain on...
It kills LND, but it doesn't kill...
Full node routing?
The full node. The full node actually defaults to broadcast on ClearNet and Tor.
But if you wanted to do only Tor, Evan Kolodis...
That's for you run it on your computer or something, you're just in the config file, you put that. What is it?
You do. You go to the config file, only net equals onion.
Yeah, only net equals onion. And then that way it'll only run on Tor.
Yeah, and it won't, if Tor goes down for some reason, it won't spread your messages to ClearNet.
Correct.
Yes. I think Evan tweeted out a link to that GitHub of how to do that, so we'll put that out there as well. So our Lightning node, did we talk about it? No, we haven't talked about it.
We don't have a Lightning node anymore, dude.
I know, but while we did have control of it, we didn't talk about this last week because this happened this week. 0.74% of funds on Lightning were running through it at one point.
Yeah, that's probably why the dude stole it from us.
And running on the Noddle, too. What's that speak to the powerfulness of the Noddle?
Dude, the Noddle, I'm not surprised that the thief turned on Tor because it's so easy on the Noddle. Like, you just click start Tor, you check two boxes, and then the whole thing just switches over, gives you an onion address, and you're good to go. All your channels are still up and everything.
And now the person running our node on Tor can only accept incoming channels from other Tor users, correct?
Yeah, my understanding is your node has to be running on Tor to connect to the Noddle running on Tor. But the reverse isn't true. So if you're running a Tor node, you're like a super user, basically. You can hop between the two. You can open channels between the two. And I'm pretty sure if you open a channel with someone who is in the ClearNet, and so then they become your peer, I'm pretty sure they can open a channel back. But they can't just like preemptively open a channel with you.
Yeah.
But we need as everyone should be running, especially everyone running their personal node should be running it through Tor.
And should be running a Tor node as well.
Tor relay, yeah.
Yes.
And, you know, it's like unconfirmed, but trying to get one-click Tor relay on the Noddle. So, well, fingers crossed.
Here's another shout-out to the Noddle team. It seems like they're pushing out updates every week. It's static channel backups, now Tor. Shout-out to that team, Keto Miner.
Yeah, so Tor relays are basically Tor nodes. For Tor, not for Bitcoin, but Bitcoiners should be running Tor relay nodes because they're going to need them for running Lightning over Tor. So do that.
Do your part. Be aware. Something else you freaks should be aware of. We officially have the first BIP to be released that proposes a Schnorr signature among a bunch of other upgrades to be included into the Bitcoin code via soft fork at some point in the future. Peter Woola dropped the BIP-Taproot BIP, which basically proposes that to get Schnorr in with the soft fork, but it would also include Merkle branches, mass, Merkleized abstracts, syntax trees, new sig hash modes, new opcodes like check sig from stack, taproot, graph root, groot, and cross input aggregation. This is a number of upgrades a lot of Bitcoiners have been talking for a while. The thing with Bitcoin development is Bitcoin Core team in particular likes to make changes as little as possible. So this is BIP, which includes a lot of things in one foul swoop, one soft fork. Nothing is a foregone conclusion. Everything that Peter Wulla sort of proposed still needs to be tested, reviewed, debated in public about the trade-offs that are included. But it seems like on paper, I think I said in the bent earlier this week, it would make the 2012 Miami Heat jealous of the incredible package deal this is. Murad, do you have any thoughts on this? Murad's got no thoughts.
That was one of my favorite bent lines I've ever read. Before I quoted that on Twitter. That was great. I literally chuckled. Yeah, I mean, this is great news. This is, it's just, we're going to have like a lot of discussion about this over the next couple of weeks, months, hopefully not years.
Yes. And, yeah, so the if, again, this is not, this particular package of proposed package is not a foregone conclusion. It still has to be debated. Again, the trade-offs, how it would be soft fork, the signaling for that. But if it is ever implemented, it seems that it would provide a bunch of good things, particularly more efficiency, more privacy, more functionality with off-chain smart contracting functionalities and other things.
Right. Yeah. My understanding is like the key thing is it allows you to construct multi-signature transactions that it's impossible to tell how many signatures are in the transaction. And that's where you get like this major privacy and efficiency gain. Because you know, we'll be able, I presume that we'll be able to do like coin joins and no one will be able to tell that it's even a coin join in the first place. Stuff like that.
Coin joins, pay to endpoint transactions, a bunch of other things. So like BIP Taproot does not, and Blockstream developer tweeted this out earlier too. BIP Taproot does not only allow N of N key path spending with MuSig, but also K of N threshold signatures. So this is, it's just, I think it has something to do with Taproot and Graphroot, where those two additions in particular create like a more robust smart contract scripting language, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's cool. We'll post the link to that BIP in the show notes, and I'm looking for something on Twitter right now that I watched yesterday. I think it would be cool too. Yeah, so Andrew Chow, he recently went to the San Francisco BitDevs meetup and presented partially signed Bitcoin transactions. That's a cool 30-minute video that we'll share in the notes as well that doesn't particularly deal with this BIP at all, but I just had it on the top of my mind there. Yeah, so another thing that I touched on as well in that edition of the bent is, like, hopefully we only have, like, a few more, if that, big upgrades like this where we're replacing parts like Schnorr signatures will replace ECDSA, and we're able to start tightening screws more, get closer towards ossification.
Yeah, this is a big step. This would be a big step towards ossification. Give us some last critical things that we really need.
Yeah, I would argue the biggest step towards ossification up to this point in Bitcoin's history. I think it's a, if, again, and this is not a foregone conclusion at all. Peter Wulla was very quick to come out on Twitter at people who
I love that. That was
who
great.
Thought this would be upgraded right away and say, hey, we need to talk about these trade-offs. And I mean, we don't have to go into like how you reach consensus about this. That's a conversation.
I'm sure we're going to be discussing this for years. Yeah, for lots of weeks.
For a while.
It's going to be, this is the first of a reoccurring topic.
It's interesting you mentioned ossification because on a couple of podcasts, Adam Back said that if there's any sort of superior technology or breakthroughs in these areas, then what could happen in the far future is that they could simply move the UTXO set into a completely different sort of underlying sort of ledger.
So is this a endorsement of ossification or an argument against it?
Well, it kind of challenges the idea that ossification is going to be something that stays intact forever.
No, I agree with that. No, I wait. So basically, I think I've said that to you on previous pods here, right?
You might have.
That I was like, even if it was some ridiculous technology that we couldn't fork in or anything, we could just take the UTXO set, start from the most current part of the UTXO set, and start that way, right?
So which begs the question, when we value these assets, what's the underlying value? Like the legitimacy?
It's the UTXO set.
Is it
that's
the UTXO set? Or,
yeah.
Or is it the actual underlying ledger?
Which is the UTXO set. Well, it's the ledger with the UTXOs in it.
So the idea is that like the ledger of the future might look something completely different to what Bitcoin is today, right? Or any of these technologies
are
today.
The same history.
But the UTXO, like the ownership
the same
set
history.
Would be the same, right?
Yeah.
Now, my question is it the history of transactions that's valuable or the tech?
The history of transactions. And like the tech makes that history possible. You couldn't have the history without the tech in the first place. But it's the that's why like Bitcoin is worth so much more than Bitcoin Cash, and why Bitcoin Cash is just going to go to fucking zero long term in terms of Bitcoin. Because Bitcoin is the most fair ledger that we have ever had, that we ever will have, and that can't be usurped. Whatever the current farthest tip is, the dominant of the most dominant chain will be what's valuable.
History is sort of tied to the Lindy effect that drives its value as well, correct?
Yes.
Yeah.
So like I've theorized like I was wondering like about speculative attacks like farther down the line. Let's say like some theoretical altcoin starts gaining on Bitcoin in terms of I guess adoption or all these different metrics, because all of them could be gaming individually, but let's just say it's gaining on Bitcoin.
The way I see it is market cap is the only thing that matters.
But that could be gamed in certain ways,
right?
Or whatever. But let's just say it is. And so then Bitcoin, there's a fork of Bitcoin with it's just an exact clone of whatever that alt chain is, but they just put the UTXO set, the Bitcoin UTXO set on. So like kind of like a non-scammy, like Bitcoin private, like what happened with Bitcoin private, but no pre-mine, like actual, like respected developers, like an actual, like real substantial improvement. I think that if the market actually values the tech of that alt chain, and it's not just pure speculative bullshit, then the ultimate winner of those three chains will be the fork of that fork of the alt chain with the Bitcoin UTXO set in it. It's like the ultimate market way of just gobbling up your competitor.
That's a fun hypothetical.
Sometimes I wonder though whether sort of this line of thinking is simply Bitcoiners convincing themselves that like they will not lose money no matter what, or is this actual reality?
No, So let's run through a scenario. If you had like some like ridiculous situation where SHA-256 was compromised, and we needed to switch POW and we switched to like script or something like that. I think Bitcoin would overtake Litecoin in hash power like almost instantly, if that situation sort of arose. And so that situation that people point to and say Litecoin is a hedge for Bitcoin in some kind of SHA-256 failure just makes zero sense to me, because of course miners are gonna be like, oh my god, my ASIC is worth so much more money now.
And then the switching costs seem pretty arduous too at that point.
What do you mean?
In this hypothetical future of switching from Bitcoin to the quote unquote better chain, better tech chain.
Yeah.
The switching costs just of...
I guess it also depends on like when that happens, because I guess at the moment all cryptocurrencies are quite speculative collectibles to me. So we can be moving back and forth. But I agree with you that if this happens like way too down the line, then yeah, there are certain network effects that are too tightly placed.
Yeah.
But yeah, like I feel like those network effects are like kind of in the UTXO set, right? Because that's where everyone's storing their money.
Yeah, and that's the other question is like you say you think it's still in the speculative collectible phase. I don't know, man.
Well, no, I don't think anybody really uses Bitcoin to transact for like actual transacting purposes. And the like, yes, the chain is moving $1 billion or more per day, but I think a lot of it has to do with the speculation itself. You know what I mean? It has to do with exchange movements, OTC movements, trading, derivatives, options, things like that.
It's moving like $5 billion a day, isn't it? Is that what like Coinmetrics said?
Something like that.
Because like I looked it up to post it to a Bcasher the other day. Because he was like, "Oh, it's like a Ponzi scheme. You don't spend it." I was like, $5 billion worth of transactions per day. I mean, but is that really is? I mean, there's so many different characteristics of money, right? So like, I would say that, like hoarding Bitcoin isn't really as speculative as maybe like trading Bitcoin, and like I'd be hesitant to like batch them into the two different categories, because even though it is obviously like a speculative investment, it is also people saving money that they believe is harder money, which is exactly how you should use money if you find yourself with hard money in your hands, right?
Yeah, and then you couple that with the fact like the infrastructure being built out right now, like particularly like things like Fidelity coming online and supporting Bitcoin only at the moment, gives Bitcoin a huge advantage and sort of helps sort of protect it from long-term competitors, I would argue. Helps. So again, there's like this threshold that will be reached. We don't know when it is. I believe we're closer to it than I believe you do, Murad, that we'll reach where it'll just be like, all right, it's too much to compete with.
I agree with you. I think one of the biggest and under-discussed strengths of Bitcoin is that it's much, much further ahead than any other crypto asset in terms of institutional adoption and financialization, institutionalization, things like that. Mm-hmm. Like people, frankly, all of these big institutions aren't working on like Ethereum gateways. A lot of them aren't, or Ethereum multisig, whatever, right? And but they are working on Bitcoin. All of them are, right? So this is something that's like tough to achieve for sure. And Bitcoin has a huge, huge sort of advantage there.
Yeah.
It's like in terms of like robustness, like it's like not even close. Like we were like all this discussion about like reorgs and all the other chains can get reorgs so much easier.
10x more susceptible.
Yeah. I was talking about like Stellar, who, you know, so like Stellar, like all it takes to freeze a transaction on Stellar is a fucking court order. Like, that's all you need.
Didn't it come out this week that, like, Stellar, like, if you took out two of their nodes, it'd be completely unworkable?
Yeah, I think it was something like that.
I mean, like, this is the thing. Like, people buying something like Stellar, it's just like, it's such a bad decision. Because, like, so the way I see it, and I guess we've said this on this podcast many, many times now.
Keybase is using it, bro.
So, like, well, second of all, it's crazy how so many of these like technologists are into some of these relatively centralized altcoins without even thinking about sort of the monetary underlying effects, right? But essentially, why would you buy Stellar? Because all of these things are competing to be money, and something centralized will never be global money, like, period. So it's already massively overpriced.
Agreed.
Hey, you're preaching to the choir here, bro.
Same with Ripple. But yeah. I think that a lot of people, it's pretty crazy, you know, with in the Bitcoin space and this industry in general, you have two sets of people. You have like the people who come at it from like a money side and people who come at it from like a tech side. And you really have to have a little bit of both. Otherwise, you're blind. Like you're totally completely fucked otherwise. And now that's how you come to those conclusions.
That being said, though, I think in terms of valuation, like in terms of like the financial side of it, in terms of pricing it, the monetary side predominates. Because at the end of the day, when we price Bitcoin, we price it vis-a-vis fiat or vis-a-vis gold in a gold-like fashion. And in that sense, it's the monetary qualities that shine. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like people are cool with Bitcoin being slower than some other blockchains, but it doesn't matter because as long as the monetary and the ledger characteristics are strong, people don't mind that like it's like less speedy than other things.
It's the fastest in terms of
security. I would even argue that
per unit of security, it's actually the fastest. Right,
yeah, and I would argue that's this, again, Bitcoin is slow, dumb, and stupid. Like it's a feature. I value that
Of immutability. It's the fastest.
Yes,
by far. Like right. Not even fucking close.
No, what was that site? Somebody dropped a site a couple of weeks ago that sort of visualizes the amount of confirmations you would need on other POW blockchains to attain the same level of security that the Bitcoin blockchain has in 6 confirmations. And Ethereum is the closest, and it took like 5x more time.
Yeah. And then like shit like SV, like the limit doesn't exist. Like there's just no amount of confirmations you can like ever accept.
Yeah.
Fucking ridiculous.
No, so great lessons on loose game theory this week. Happy that we've been talking about them.
You know what's another thing about the Binance hack? Remember when that Japanese exchange CoinCheck got hacked of like $500 million worth of NEM?
Mm-hmm.
Like, they just froze that shit. They called up the NEM, like, president. And they were like, you have to stop that. And they just stopped it.
Wow.
Like, that was that. And I think there was, like, some other super centralized shitcoin in there, too. Like might a Ripple or something.
Something like that.
Yeah. They just froze them all. Like, that was that. No discussion. None of that, you know, bullshit. All
right. Since we're back on the Binance hack, what if this hacker sends it? This is actually a good segue, too. Sends it to a Wasabi wallet.
Oof. You know, I was talking to someone like about this yesterday. I'd prefer, if you're listening, humble Binance thief, you know, like just like wait a little bit. You know, it's like the Satoshi thing to WikiLeaks. It's just like just wait a little bit. It'd be better.
Don't kick the hornet's nest.
Well, it's not that. Like, I'm fine with kicking the hornet's nest. Like, we'll probably like eventually like Wasabi will have to be forked. And the coordinator, whoever's running the coordinator, has to be anonymous if they like go after no power on them. But if they don't, then that's even better. You know, they're not based in the U.S. But I just think that people still are like I could already see like the FUD lines. I want as many people to use CoinJoin as possible. So I'd prefer if we don't have like the David Schwartzes of the world and like the Vinnies and all them like fucking telling people that, oh, if they use Wasabi, like they're going to get mixed with the stolen Binance coins. Like it would just slow adoption. So I would just prefer if he, she, they didn't do it.
You heard it here from AutoDAO's mouth. Don't kick the hornet's nest of Wasabi, please.
But if they do, it'll be fine. I think, look, at the end of the day, Wasabi can't handle the volume of 7,000 Bitcoin. It would literally take, at current volumes, it would take them years. It would take them, like, probably over 2 years.
To make sure they're not mixed with their own coins.
Yeah, because otherwise, like, they're basically just mixing with themselves. So it's not really practical. If they want to do it on, like, a slower basis, in general with these hacks, like, the slower the attacker moves in liquidating the coins, the better off they are. You don't want to try and like move large amounts. But there's so many different ways. They could use Join Market. They can go into, you know, they can go into Monero. They can come back out. They can go through a bunch of different altcoins. They can go into, you know, sketchy exchanges, come out of sketchy exchanges. There's all different techniques you can do. And they'll probably do things combined. But I would just appreciate if they didn't just send it straight from the 7 addresses they're in right now into Wasabi. That would be fucking great because everyone would know.
Well, if you're not the Binance hacker and you do want to use Wasabi at Bitcoin or start at the bitcoin-only.com website at 6102 Bitcoin on Twitter, recently released a new guide. It's a pretty good one. So we'll put that in the show notes.
Oh, yeah, this guide's great. And his website's really good too, bitcoin-only.com.
Mm-hmm.
It's obviously, it's only Bitcoin content.
Only. Another news item today, Honeyminer, another Stacking Sats partner here at Tales from the Crypt. They released their Mac software. So any of you freaks out there with Macs that want to take advantage of Honeyminer to mine the most profitable GPU mining.
Yeah, you mine shitcoins and then they auto dump them and they pay you in Satoshis.
Yes.
Murad, have you tried Honeyminer yet?
I haven't.
You should really try it. My girlfriend, like the way she knows the Bitcoin price is the amount of like the value of our Satoshis that we've mined with Honeyminer. It's just a fucking badass interface. You've used it, right?
I have used it. It's a very cool one.
It's just like they gamified it. And you're really doing, you're going to lose money doing it because it's, you use more electricity than you get paid. But
so why would I do it?
Well, because, you know, you're getting like KYC-less Bitcoin. Sure. You're truly stacking sats on like a rolling continual basis. So
and
like
if I believe that you added downside pressure on the altcoin.
Yes,
right?
I was just getting there. That's the best part. You're literally doing like you're basically speculative attacking whatever the most profitable altcoin is at a given time.
Yeah.
And pumping the price of Bitcoin because you're buying little bits of Bitcoin right. with it.
It's funny you say like it's not profitable right now, but yes, you get fresh Satoshis and stuff like that. But that made me think of Try Lolly. And a lot of people were talking on Twitter this week about using Lolly, and eventually like Bitcoin, hyper Bitcoinization does happen. People could basically be shopping for free right now.
Mr. Hoggle really likes them.
Yeah, he loves them. Did you see like Schmeagle or whatever got like $125 reward from Overstock?
I did not see that.
Yeah, 2.5 million Satoshis.
Shop.
Wow.
Talk about stacking
like
sats
massive.
While shopping. Shop. If you guys got any big trips planned, you're buying flights, staying at hotels, just use Lolly.
It's pretty ridiculous.
Yeah.
That's pretty fucking crazy. And just always just use Wasabi afterwards. When you withdraw from Lolly, use Wasabi. When you withdraw from Cash App, use Wasabi. When you withdraw from Honey Miner, use Wasabi.
Make sure you have enough sats to meet the limit for the mixing.
Protect your privacy.
Yes. Speaking of protecting your privacy, Samurai, you've tested out their Whirlpool. How was it?
Pretty great. It was pretty great.
What was the experience like?
So you run like an app on your computer and you like pair it with your phone, and then it does these. So Wasabi does like these bigger mixes, like 100 participants, bigger amounts, 0.1, Samurai goes with like 5 participants with a smaller amount, with the idea that you can then keep repeating it how many times you want, but you can get like decent amount of privacy like quicker. Yeah. It's just good to see more options. And you know, right now they like the plan is they don't have this set up yet, but the plan is you know, you'll be able to just spend it from your Samurai wallet on your phone and it'll already be mixed. Because like you're running the actual mixing client on your computer or your Noddle or something like that, so you would pull out your Samurai wallet, you'd have your spending cash, and it would already be ready for you.
Be able to use privately.
Yeah. So that interface, I think I'm most excited about the mobile to node interface, and I just in general like I want to see more companies and projects working on the mobile too.
Yeah. So speaking of that, I've had a lot of experience with that over the weekend when we were setting up the TFTC.io full node and lightning node. I was able to use Zap. Zap has their iPhone app out and it's fucking incredible. Like you said, scan a QR code and you're able to control the node from your phone. It was honestly this weekend I was pretty busy, but I had to set up channels and preparation for the site going live, and I was just able on the go to open channel with you, Pierre, BitRefill, have you guys reciprocate and accept on the go. It was insane. And the UX is on the Zap app in particular is better than any I've seen in this space, and quite frankly it's the most fun app I've used, not even Bitcoin related, in quite a while with how easy they made it. So shout out to Jack Mahlers and team on that.
Yeah, I fucking love Zap. Zap is awesome. This was the first time I ever got to see the mobile app because I'm on Android. It's like in this space, usually Android gets all the good stuff. So,
well,
this is a new one for me.
Yeah, I'm glad to have this over you. But you were experimenting with AB Core over the weekend too.
Yeah, it takes a while to synchronize.
All right, so let's talk about it. So for you freaks.
I'm really excited about it. I'm like at like 45% or 50% or something.
So we've talked about this on TFTC before. If you freaks don't know, AB Core is basically allows you to run Bitcoin full nodes on Android devices. Udi Werthmeyer and Bitcoin Larry are working on it. And what pushed you to download? There was something in particular that pushed you to download it.
Okay, so Larry works on Green Wallet, which is Blockstream's wallet, Green Address. That's like, it's by far the best mobile wallet on iPhone, and it's like It's like up there with Samurai on Android. It's like this two of two multi-sig product where they have one key, you have one key, and then there's a time lag and it pays back to you. So then they came out with AB Core, which is a separate Android app that is Core, the most recent version of Core, run on any Android device that automatically has Tor enabled. So it displays a QR code for you, and then you take one Android device, let's say like a leftover Android device you have, or like a cheap Android TV for like $50, whatever. You install AB Core on it, then you scan it with your phone with Green Address, and then your Green Address wallet
is watch only.
It just verifies with your full node, but the wallet is the multi-sig Green Address.
Yeah.
You're using your own full node.
It's, again,
run on an Android phone or like a Android tablet or something.
Slowly but surely, this stuff's getting built out. This has been the best bear market fundamental-wise ever. And I think this last week in particular is evidence of that. We have Bitfinex followed by Binance 1 week after the other, and the price has gone through $6,000. So let's talk about price. Murad, you're the chart whore in the room right now. What are you saying?
Yeah, I mean, I totally agree with you. The market taking the Tether fiasco and the Binance hack in the span of 2.5 weeks in such a stride.
We went up. We kept going up.
It's extremely bullish.
As equities are falling too.
You know what they're saying? In bear markets, good news don't matter. In bull markets, bad news don't matter. And I think that the fact that we went from 5,100 to almost 6,100 in essentially, despite these news, or rather in spite of these news, makes me very bullish. I'm short-term bullish, and I'm long-term bullish.
It's pretty crazy, right? That it just keeps it powered right through both of that.
Totally.
Both Bitfinex and Binance.
Well, it would be remiss of us if we didn't bring up our bet. Matt and I are winning right now. But I do think we should touch on, we made our bet, and you guys were using indicators that used information from blockchain.info that threw off those indicators. Can you explain what was going on there?
Yeah, so some of our indicators that made us particularly bearish, we've realized that we relied too much on blockchain.info data. From what I hear, is some of the heuristics that blockchain.info has been using for several years now, due to the fact that blockchain.info itself is not very popular anymore and their whole suite of products isn't as popular anymore, some of those heuristics don't give the correct adjusted volume anymore. It essentially overextends. It gives higher values than is necessary. Sometimes it gives the lower values than necessary. Luckily for us, Coinmetrics has come up with an alternative product of the same sort, which we believe is giving much more accurate signals. And we've switched to them since early March. And we've been very happy with the product so far.
Let me be clear. Blockchain.info is both malicious and incompetent.
Right.
And that is why their data sucks.
Right. I wouldn't be surprised if 5 years from now they would essentially be completely irrelevant.
You can't even look up a SegWit address on blockchain.info.
Disappointing.
They don't exist.
That's why we're using blockstream.info now.
Yeah, or OXT.me.
OXT.me as well.
But yeah, I think you guys are winning this third bet. I wouldn't.
You were pretty confident last time.
No, I said I wasn't as confident about the previous one.
I can't believe.
I said this one is like more like even. The
I
previous
know, but
one
originally,
I was
originally we went to dinner where I bought you guys dinner for the previous bet.
Yes.
Right.
And it was a very generous dinner.
Right.
Very big dinner.
And we were all drinking. You weren't drinking with us, right?
I was not.
And we agreed to. To like a ridiculous, you were like, I'm done with dinners. I've won too many dinners. And we agreed to like this ridiculous bet where we're going to like, your loser would have to take the others to Fiji or something like that.
To Bali, wasn't
it? To Bali.
Yeah.
And then the next morning I woke up and I was like, that is just like way too, you know, outrageous, extravagant. Like, that'd be absolutely ridiculous. Like,
especially if we were to lose that.
Yeah.
Bet.
It would have been in poor taste, like in either way. And then we switched it to the Nobu dinner.
Right.
But like, just from those actions, like you were
so
pretty confident
lose,
about it,
I
right?
Just,
you were like really confident
like to,
about it.
I
it was like $3,400. Like, it's so far away now.
I would like to reiterate that if you guys win this one, the current score would still be 2-1 in my favor, because I did win two of them before that, right?
No, Marty's winning. Right.
You were Marty's on my side winning. The previous one. Yeah,
yeah, that's right, that's right. We'd be tied.
Yeah, Marty is...
But me against you, Matt, would be 2-1.
The whole bear market was Marty's fault. If Marty had just went on my side with the bet, then it just would never would have happened. That was the issue.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry, freaks, for making the bear market drag on a little longer.
Marty manipulates. He manipulates the market.
I needed to stack more sats. I'm sorry, guys.
He was the $100 million man the other day. The Reuters.
I fucking wish.
Reuters.
On
Reuters.
April 2nd?
Yeah. Were you watching the charts around that time?
I was, yes.
What were you saying? Was it crazy?
Yeah, I mean, it happened literally in like one and a half hours. So yeah, it was crazy.
It's the best. That's the best part of Bitcoin.
From what I've read, like it was deliberately planned to make it as sharp as possible. Like they even picked like 4:30, which is like the least volume during the day, UTC, like around the world, to just where the order books are the thinnest. So you just pierce through them. You know what I mean?
Beautiful. Imagine what, you know, millions of people can do if that's what a few people can do.
I think like the people who are surprised by what's been going on in the last month and a half are soon going to be surprised by even bigger moves in the upcoming bull market, because I think it's going to get crazy. I think like maybe, I don't know if it's going to be this next cycle or the one after, but maybe even possibly this cycle. There's going to be a global scramble for Bitcoin and it's just going to get market bought every day.
No one's going to sell.
Like exactly. There's going to be no Bitcoin to sell.
That's going to be fucking crazy.
I mean, again, we've been cautioning not to hold your breath for the institutional money meme, but it seems like we're getting a little closer. It seems like.
So people, like, the people always, like, FUD Bitcoin saying that, oh, there's, like, no cash flows behind it or whatever. But that's actually an amazing thing. Because there's no cash flows, it's not tied to anything, like, real. And, like, money is valued purely psychologically, right? So if a big chunk of important people around the world decide that Bitcoin is actually a thing, it will skyrocket in like in a week.
Yeah. Well, we'll be here reporting if any of those big, important, rich people decide that Bitcoin is a thing.
Yeah, I'm just glad to have you back on our side. So, I mean, we can't really make any. Can we? It's impossible to make bets here because we're just all bullish.
Well,
right?
We have to wait for the first bet to finish to make more bets.
We can't compound bets.
I'd rather not.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I'll come on the show if you guys want me here after the next bet is over. What was that? August, right?
August 1st.
August 1st?
Yeah, if the price is over $3,400, we win the bet.
Oh, my God.
$3,421.
Yeah, I'm losing that.
XBX price.
I'm losing that with like 99% probability. Essentially.
Yeah. Next topic that we have is a small one, but funny one nonetheless. Talking about quote-unquote Bitcoin competitors, it came out this week that one person is in control, or excuse me, is responsible for 50% of the Bitcoin Cash transactions. Whether this is to...
It doesn't look like it's to inflate the transaction.
It just looks like it's a poor use of the blockchain.
Yeah, it's just... Transaction fees are non-existent, so there's no reason to not just spam the blockchain with a bunch of content. So they just do it. I think Nick said like it cost them like $240 in fees or something for the day to just like fill up the chain.
Yeah, so be aware.
But just and also like it's another reminder that if you're looking at low fee networks or no fee networks, like they're going to obviously game their transaction counts because they can. They can just send millions of transactions back and forth without paying any fees or paying minimal fees. And first of all, and that definitely comes with a cost because it comes to a cost to the node operators that have to deal with all that additional data. It's like that cost is pushed off and it's not actually no fee.
Yeah, and it highlights the fact that these systems, the metrics, can be gamed pretty easily.
Yeah, and if low fee networks basically like they make it seem they value the short term over the long term. Long term, it'll lead the chain to being absolutely fucked, but short term, it gives the appearance of cheaper transactions. And one thing to note is even with this one service spamming transactions, like Bitcoin Cash still has like absolutely like even though they can game Bitcoin Cash transactions, they're not even bothering. They're still way beneath Bitcoin's number of transactions. So that's pretty interesting. What are you looking up over there?
Looking up our sponsored shout out for the week. That's it. That's all we have for topics. Let's riff on some stuff.
We got the Bitcoin Rabbi's book here.
We do have Bitcoin Rabbi's book. Shout out to the Bitcoin Rabbi for sending us a couple books and signing them. Pretty pumped to share these with the youngins of my family.
I'm going to keep mine in mint condition and hodl the shit out of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe I'll buy some other ones to share. You got the autographed one, you know? I'm not going to give an autographed one to a kid. Like, that goes against my whole belief system. So, Murad, what do you think, what are you most excited about over the next 3 months here?
I think it's fair to say that we are in the early stages of the next bull cycle, so I'm really excited for the price to finally be heading in the upward direction. Personally, the reason I'm super excited is because I was waiting all bear market to finally move all of my assets into cryptocurrencies, because I don't like dealing with the fiat banks and the traditional banking system that much. But now, being 100, like, genuinely, like, this is kind of a cliche, but I'm actually like talking about my real life right now. Like, being 100% in control of my wealth and being able to like send it anywhere, wherever I want, without sort of waiting for the weekend to be over or waiting for 4 hours to pass or whatever, is just something that brings me great joy and bliss.
Damn right.
That's awesome. And I just sat down with Juthika Chow from LedgerX, and she was explaining like just like the access to collateral for options desk like hers is something that's unparalleled. And again, like, I feel like most people in the world do not fully grasp this. Most people in the world do not fully grasp Bitcoin, but this revolution in itself is huge.
Totally. There's a whole sort of slew of second and third order effects which like make finance more efficient, make like industries more efficient, etc.
But so I absolutely agree. And like, so we've had this discussion before between like censorship resistance and immutability. For those properties to exist, like, we need like privacy tools like Wasabi and stuff. Like, if you can't use Bitcoin privately, then, you know, forget about sending on weekends. You might not even be able to send it anyway, right?
For sure.
That's all we have for topics this week. Just a little maintenance here. We launched a site this week, and we're experimenting with some cool things, one of which is the ability for you freaks to purchase shout outs and sponsored, quote unquote, sponsorships of the podcast. It's something we like to move to in the long term, hopefully, if it's possible. A user supported model. This is the beginning steps. We had one freak buy a contribution this week, Pedro, and he said value for value model. Nice, listeners as producers of the show. I like it. And he shared a YouTube video of Adam Carey sort of explaining what they're doing with the No Agenda podcast and their user sponsor model. So I will put that in a link and shout out to Pedro.
Awesome. Yeah. That's pretty badass. Our first shout out.
We've got a few more sup freaks hats available on the site as well. So you want to go to tftc.io/merch.
We're almost out, I think, right?
Almost out. Yes. So it's been a cool experience. It's been fun. Like I said, it's an MVP, and we're going to build on it and create more reasons for you freaks to visit the site in the future.
I'm very excited about it. It's looking pretty good. It's a good start.
It's not perfect. It's a good start. What I like, BTC Pay Server, man. Playing with that has been so much fun. Like, being able to sort of brand your own invoices has been cool.
Dude, the branded invoices is so fucking slick. It's fucking badass.
And like Murad was saying, it really highlights the power of having control of your own money. Like, I've connected my Trezor to our BTC Pay Server, and I have full control of the money that's coming through our website, which is crazy.
Yeah, it's pretty fucking badass.
Yeah. So again, shout out to Pedro for the shout out. Definitely go check out the website. Murad, do you have a last parting note for the freaks out there?
Nothing specific today, but I would say don't short this market anymore. I think the wisest thing to do from an investment or trading standpoint is to be long biased here. Buy all the dips. I think all the dips have been getting bought very, very quickly and will continue to do so. Like, don't short. Like, a lot of people are short right now, and it's going to be very, very bad for them, in my opinion.
Did Bitcoin Tina get to you?
Bitcoin Tina did not get to me. I mean, Bitcoin Tina was telling me to go long since 7,000, right? And like, sooner or later, of course, when you're perma bullish, sooner or later you're going to be correct.
That's my strategy.
Today he's correct, and for the next 3 years, as I've told him, he will be celebrating, and he will be celebrated. But like, I like to be a little bit more nimble and adaptable with my personal portfolio. But it's time to be long now.
I have two questions. Do you think we're going to fall below 5,000 before 8,000?
The two scenarios that I'm looking at right now is we either we come to like 63, 64 and stick there before moving even further up, or we go to 5K and that will be the lowest we'll see.
Like around 5K-ish we want?
Around 5K-ish.
And my second thing is altcoins have been getting absolutely slaughtered. What are your feelings about that?
I think the altcoins... So essentially, all altcoins underperformed Bitcoin in the month of April. Like, that's, it's ridiculous.
By like a lot. Like, Ethereum was down right. Like 30% or something.
It's actually 20%. Absolutely... So two things I'll say here. It's crazy that Bitcoin, despite its massive size and being orders of magnitude bigger than any altcoin, has outperformed in the month of April. But it shows two things. It shows, I think it's the first evidence of my theory that the median IQ of the space, cycle to cycle, is increasing. People are going to Bitcoin first and foremost. And second of all, and this is more on the speculative side for the traders out there, I think rank the performance of all the altcoins versus Bitcoin in the month of April. I think those that have underperformed Bitcoin the least are the ones being accumulated by quote-unquote smart money right now.
You heard it here. Check it out.
Could it be the great finally Bitcoin pulling away from the rest of the pack? Could it be a return to like the status quo? Do you think 2017? Do you think that'll ever have like an altcoin boom like 2017?
I think investors and funds and trader strategy has to adapt. The easy life and the dream where you can buy like 4 shitcoins and just get rich in the span of 2 years is probably gone. You have to become a little bit more intelligent and a little bit sort of more focused to make money in this market. Bitcoin will probably start dominating even more. As I've said a couple of times here and elsewhere, I think something like December, where 100 shitcoins going 100x in 1 month, is probably a thing of the past. I think there will be maybe like half a dozen altcoins that outperform like bottom cycle to the very, very top, but there will be fewer and far in between than in the past. I think Bitcoin should be like the core part of your portfolio without a doubt. And then like, don't gamble too much on other things.
Yeah, no, it's, and again, like what we were touching on earlier, what is the threshold at which there, what is the point of no return? And like you said, it does seem like the market is wising up with this disconnection of the prices in April in particular. And more interestingly, is the last 5 days sort of disconnection from the equities markets as they've been trembling and Bitcoin has been rising against them. It's a very short term period to benchmark those two markets against each other in particular, but it is an observation nonetheless.
I mean, I think like the most important question in cryptocurrency in terms of like trying to make money is figuring out like how winner take all this market is going to be, right? And that's like something that's discussed almost every day by us, it's discussed by all our friends and by all the people, right? So like, it depends on how dominant you think Bitcoin is going to be. If it's going to take 95% of the market, that's like one scenario, right? You're probably going to just go levered Bitcoin. If it's going to be more like Pareto style, 3 or 4 juicy blockchains for the foreseeable future, which is what I think is going to happen, and like you have like Bitcoin at 70, number 2 at 20, number 3 at 8, number 4 at 2, etc., right? If you have something like that, then you can make money with number 2 or number 3, but it kind of depends on your view. I will say what I'm doing with my portfolio is and this is not with the fund, but I can't talk about that, but this is with my own personal portfolio. I'm doing essentially Bitcoin hold, various sort of leveraged Bitcoin future plays, and I'm doing a small Decred hold, and then I'm trading with the other sort of 35% to 40%.
Thank you for sharing that. We appreciate you.
Transparency. It's highly touted in this industry.
I don't think altcoins are going anywhere. I don't think shitcoins are going anywhere. I think they will probably be around in different incarnations forever, with some coming and most going and new ones coming and just always constantly with Bitcoin just sitting on top. In a 90%, a little bit higher than 90% type position.
The bigger Bitcoin gets, though, the harder it is for a brand new altcoin to even pretend that they can achieve something significant.
Yeah, but they'll never be. The only time anybody has ever attempted to flip in Bitcoin is really Ethereum. Like, every other time, it was, my altcoin is the silver to Bitcoin's gold.
And that was fueled by the ICO mania.
Yeah. And they were, and they got, they got a little bit carried away about it. Yeah.
So,
that probably won't happen that much anymore, is what I don't think.
Like, three things I'll say. Like, a lot of VCs and investors in the space, they think that the best risk reward is in the coins or tokens or crypto assets that haven't been released yet. I disagree. I actually think that the best risk reward is in the assets that already exist. Because once again, they're thinking about it in terms of tech, I'm going to find
the newest and greatest tech.
I'm going to find the Facebook to the MySpaces, right? But this is totally wrong. It's about entrenched moneyness, and that takes time. Time isn't something you can fake, right? And time isn't something you can catch up to quickly, right? By definitionally. Two, I think you see a lot of heavy altcoin investors cling and do their absolute best to try to amplify every single piece of Bitcoin FUD. Every little thing that comes up, you see people like Emin Günsür and a couple of hedge fund managers names, but they always make any teeny tiny problem or concern with Bitcoin seem like a much bigger deal than it is. And when you dig deeper, you realize it's either an altcoin creator that's whose coin is about to be released, or it's a VC fund that's balls deep in SAFTs that are completely illiquid, or it's somebody who is simply because here's the thing, right? Every hedge fund manager, and frankly, even I have to balance this with the strength of Bitcoin, to be completely frank with you. Every hedge fund manager, VC or whatever, their dream and something they dream about before they go to sleep is Bitcoin failing for some reason and them catching the 10,000x or 1,000x with its replacer. But I have to be honest, every day that passes, it's less and less likely that's going to happen, right?
Because
Bitcoin is strong, right? And essentially, you will see a continuation of this, because anybody who manages money, either a large sum of money for themselves or for other people, or even frankly individual investors, their dream is to be the person who catches those massive returns. But the thing is, I think those easy gains are probably gone. And the last prediction, view I will express is that I think all this tokenomics, all the ICO, all the dab bullshit is essentially gone. Even sort of the quote unquote normie VCs that I'm talking with lately, they're coming around to the idea that the narrative for the next market is probably going to be store of value.
Money.
Store of value centric, right? And I think that's what you should be focused on.
Yeah, those token economic never made any sense. They all could just use money instead.
Right.
They don't need a fucking token.
Well, Ether's money now. They just rebranded.
I think for full transparency's sake, I think there will be a couple of tokens, kind of Numeraire or Augur, whatever. If they get huge volumes, then that acts as a proxy for a cash flow, kind of similar to an equity, kind of a taxi medallion, right? Work tokens, they call them these days. But just looking at the usage right now, it's still quite abysmal. Theoretically, there is a path towards making money there, But I think like the best risk reward is once again in the sort of the store of value place.
Yeah. It's no, like you were saying, like the churn is probably going to continue. I think, believe it was Blockchain Capital released a GIF of basically the churn that's happened with Bitcoin and altcoins under it, the top 10 coins over the last 10 years. And you see Bitcoin standing strong as the strongest coin and the bottom nine of the top 10 sort of switching pretty rapidly over the last decade. So,
yeah, yes. Almost none of the last top 10 are back. You know, like in the last cycle, the top of the last cycle.
Not even just the last cycle, the cycle before that and the one before that as well. No, but I agree as well. I think this stuff is open source. People are, again, just going to be attracted to the ability to spin these networks up and attempt to squeeze yield out of them. So I don't think they're going anywhere anytime soon. But I do think that Bitcoin's dominance is becoming more and more cemented per block.
Yeah.
No pun intended.
Absolutely.
Pun definitely intended.
All that shit is just, it's mostly a distraction.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's all we have for this rabbit hole recap. You get Freaks got an extra 15 minutes this week. Shout out to our sponsors, Unchained and Cash App, and shout out to our user sponsor, Pedro, this week.
Stay humble, Stacksets.
Peace and love, Freaks.